everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Aces Up the Sleeve. I'm Patty, co-hosting with the co-managing partner of Pocket Aces Racing, or PAR for the quick reference, Jared Shoemaker. And in our little podcast, we shed light on all things Pocket Aces Racing. We're going to talk about the finer points of syndicate ownership. We're going to discuss what you all, the listeners this time, because it's an audio only, but the listeners have asked us to talk about. And since we are industry participants, we're going to talk about the industry at large. And today we are joined by Kirsten Green, who is the executive director of the Retired Racehorse Project. And I know, I imagine, Jared, you feel the same way, but aftercare is absolutely critical for us at Pocket Aces Racing, as it should be for every racing outfit. So I'm thrilled, Kirsten, that you found time in your busy day. You're a busy woman. So thank you so much for coming on and you know, helping us maybe introduce some of our newer partners, newer listeners to what the Retired Racehorse Project is.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me, and thanks for making room in your podcast for this topic. I think syndicates are so important in, you know, bringing new owners into the game and making sure that they're educated on everything in ownership, aftercare included, is so important. So thank you.
You're very welcome, and we're thrilled that you could join us today. And you know, we've made aftercare important for us, you know, ever since we've been in business for 20 years now. And, you know, it's just ownership doesn't stop when the horse's career is over, whether the career is racing or breeding or whatever the case may be. You've still got responsibilities, and we place a very, very high value on organizations like the Retired Racehorse Project and so many other aftercare organizations, and it's vital to our industry, and we just appreciate everything you do. So let's just jump right in. Before we dig into, you know, what the Retired Racehorse Project is all about, and you know, I know a lot of our listeners, a lot of our partners, they've got a general idea, they know it exists. Some of them are very, very knowledgeable about it. But I'd say most are not super knowledgeable about you know, everything that's involved in the Retired Racehorse Project. But before we get into all that, would love to hear just a little bit about your background, how you got started with the Retired Racehorse Project, and then just take us from there.
Yeah. Well, I'm a native of Maryland. I grew up in Maryland. I still am in Maryland. RRP is headquartered here. And I grew up at a lesson facility, like a horse crazy horse kid, riding thoroughbred lesson horses, horses that had retired from racing. And I'd gone on to teach all ability levels, from kids learning how to post the trot up to going to their first horse shows and beyond. And really have had an appreciation for the thoroughbred since then. My racing exposure was fairly limited. Of course, Triple Crown races were the only equine thing that you could watch on TV when I was a kid. So naturally was watching the Triple Crown races. I kind of came up in the like real quiet, charismatic era of racing, and really have fond memories of, you know, jumping up and down on my couch screaming about that stuff. And my first live racing experience was probably about in fourth grade. My mom took me to Laurel Park on Maryland Million Day. And I don't come from horse family, so she was like, here's $5, like, have fun. And you know, went and was like, well, this gray horse with the female jockey seems cool, like the odds are 40-1, like, that's probably about still the extent of my handicapping. But yeah, I mean, I came up riding all through elementary school, through high school, in the equestrian side. If you think that you might want to kind of make a living for yourself, you go out and do a working student, you know, usually working for very little or free for a professional. And I kind of went on that trajectory and realized that I liked riding, but I didn't think that I was going to ever be competitive enough to really hack it as a pro. Took a little bit of a break and just kind of maintained my connections in the equestrian industry locally. And so I just kind of happened to be running in the right circle when Stuart Pittman founded RRP in about kind of 2009, 2010. Got started as a volunteer, and that's kind of all she wrote. I've been here ever since.
All right. So, I guess you mentioned it started in 2010, 2009, 2010, in that time frame. I guess first let's talk about what it is now. Let's talk about how it started. You know, what was that initial vision? And obviously, it's grown tremendously over the last 14, 15 years. So just give us a little history on, you know, how it got started and what it looked like at the time and what it looks like now.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that is just like a kind of like little factoid housekeeping thing, and it's a really normal kind of conflation that we run into. The Retired Racehorse Project is the organization that produces the event that is the Thoroughbred Makeover. And so it just kind of entered into being like a colloquialism to refer to like the event as the RRP, but RRP is actually the organization that runs the event. So just to clarify sure. that, yeah. It's really normal. Like, I'm not lecturing you guys. It just happens all the time. We've stopped fighting it.
Sure.
So RRP was founded by a guy named Stuart Pittman, who is a lifetime horseman and a eventing rider. So he came up on the equestrian side, but really came up riding off-track thoroughbreds in that kind of generation that, you know, the off-track thoroughbred really kind of dominated in the show ring, and really had, you know, kind of his career and his livelihood and on the back of thoroughbreds. And he kind of like looked around one day and was just like, nobody is riding thoroughbreds anymore. You know, the kind of warm bloods and the stock breeds had been kind of like better marketed and had really taken over the, you know, recreational riding and the sport horse landscape. And he was like, nobody is teaching people how to ride thoroughbreds anymore. Nobody is promoting the thoroughbred and its qualities, and we've got to do something about that. And so he really kind of got started, like in a kind of grassroots way. He had booth space at like the Mid-Atlantic Horse Expo, like kind of series of events that you kind of runs this time of year, and he had a thoroughbred stallion that he was standing for sport horse breeding, and so he would get booth space to promote his horse, and it kind of slowly kind of crept over into like, I'm building this nonprofit, and it kind of started to kind of take over and be space for RRP. So we kind of have a little bit of a DNA in terms of doing expos, doing demonstrations, clinics, seminars. It's always been very education oriented. And the earliest days of the organization were really driven by our presence at these expos and some of like shorter term trainer challenges that we would run throughout the expo kind of circuit in the winter. So we kind of came up doing that. And then it was about 2013, shortly after the Sandy Hook shooting. And I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a thing going around where you should do 26 acts of kindness for in memorial for the kids that were lost that day. And we had a board member that wanted to do something like that, and she was a racing owner herself. And so she, Carolyn Carlson, was kind of the driver of the very first iteration of the Thoroughbred Makeover, which was in 2013 at Pimlico. And it was a 26-horse training showcase. So it's kind of evolved from that. We did 2013 at Pimlico. We did a slightly different format at 2014. In 2014 at Pimlico, and then it was 2015 that we moved it down to the Kentucky Horse Park in October, and it's been in that kind of format and time of the year ever since. So we're heading into the 15-year organization anniversary and the 10-year anniversary for the event moving to Kentucky in its current format.
Well, and for context for our newer listeners who maybe don't know what it is now, it's not unusual to have 26 horses in a class now at the Thoroughbred Makeover. So it has grown incredibly since its beginning. And that's fantastic. I mean, it's fantastic news, but it's like it has grown a lot since that first held event.
Yeah, we've kind of reached this, you know, when we first moved and started offering $100,000 of prize money, you know, it was very like, lightning in a bottle. Like, we were just kind of hanging on for dear life, and things have kind of leveled out a little bit now. And so we kind of have a sweet spot of like how many horses we know we can accept each year and kind of run comfortably in the schedule that we have allotted at the horse park and that sort of thing. But even so, we've registered over 5,000 horses to this program since 2015. And, you know, we're at a kind of sweet spot where we're registering, you know, maybe 500-600 horses a year. And you've got probably about 50% of them or so that actually make it to the event itself in October. But all of those horses are kind of still benefiting from the process, even if they don't ultimately make the competition itself. So we consider them all to be graduates of the program, regardless.
And so how does a horse qualify? And then, you know, Patty mentioned different groups. So I mean, what different competitions or different segments, or I don't know if that's the right word, but what different competitions exist now for the horses that get entered?
Sure. So it's a kind of multi-part process. Before horses can be entered, the trainer has to go through a trainer application. We call them trainers, regardless of whether or not they are junior, amateur, professional. It's an open competition as far as status for the rider goes. And we just refer to them collectively as trainers. So those people have to go through an application process with us first. So they're submitting kind of like a horseman's resume, letting us know what their background is and their level of experience, what kind of support and resources they have to go through the process. And then we're kind of looking at their riding ability, you know, whether it's through a combination of videos, competition results, that sort of thing, to do our best to make sure that the people that we are accepting to the event are going to be able to kind of complete the process in a way that is safe and productive. And they're going to be able to come to the horse park and be in a very busy show environment and complete the level of test that is required of them in a, again, safe and productive way.
So to keep people like me from just showing up with a horse.
Saying, hey, yeah. I mean, it's not the level of competition that we have set is such that you need to take the process serious. It's not for a casual participant, but it's actually like it's totally attainable as well. But you do have to really participate in the process and be actively preparing your horse and getting them out to shows and preparation events and clinics and lessons and stuff ahead of time. And it sounds like we're real sticklers, but what we really want is for people to have a successful experience with the breed. And we want to make sure that when the horses get to the horse park, like this is a big showcase for the breed where we're demonstrating the versatility and the trainability of the horse. So if we have people that are just kind of like underexperienced showing up and not having a good time, that's going to just kind of further feed the negative narrative that the horses have sometimes. And so we just want to be really mindful of making sure that like we're putting our best foot forward as a kind of representation of the thoroughbred riding horse.
Yeah. There's a pretty bad stigma that thoroughbreds are hot tempered and crazy and you can't do anything with them. And it's like, yeah, you definitely don't want it. I'm not saying it necessarily would happen intentionally, but you don't, if you can avoid the situation, you definitely don't want to play into that stigma accidentally even.
Exactly. And you know, if somebody goes through our application process, and most people know like what our expectations are and are familiar with us, and so we're able to approve most people, but if for some reason we just determine somebody is not ready, like we always want to encourage them to keep working towards it. We'll give them specific feedback from our application committee to say like, here's what we'd like to see you working on and some ways that you can kind of pursue and improve things. And we'd love to see you apply again in the future. And, you know, we're out here trying to expand the market for these horses. So it's in our best interest and in the mission of what we're doing to kind of cultivate those people and encourage them to come back. So it's very focused on making sure trainers have the resources and support they need. So once they pass that, then they can enter an eligible horse. And they can enter up to three. And so the horse criteria is, we have two classes of eligibility. Originally was the retiring racehorse division. And then a couple of years ago, we added a division for recently retired broodmares. So the criteria and eligibility is a little bit different, just kind of out of consideration for the needs and kind of point in life cycle is going to be very different for those two groups. So the test is all the same. All the process and everything is the same, but their eligibility criteria is different, and so their results are tabulated separately. So for the retiring racehorses, they will have had at least one lifetime race or published work within the 2 years prior to the event. So for this year, eligible retiring racehorses will have had their last race or published work on or after July 1, 2023. And then in addition to that, they really can't have started formal retraining until December. So like December that just passed of 24 is when they can really start training for their new career. They can only have up to 15 rides prior to December. And that's really just for like evaluative purposes. Like if the horse is at an aftercare facility, that allows for people to come and try the horse and you know, make sure things are going to be a good fit and that sort of thing. And they can't have done any competitions prior to December 1st. So that's the retiring racehorse kind of track of eligibility. And then for the broodmares, they need to have had a lifetime published work or start, but that doesn't have to fall into a particular time range. They also don't have the riding limitation, but they do have to have at least one reported cover with the jockey club within the previous two seasons. So that's the track for the broodmares. So that's the kind of, that's a lot. There, we're trying to make sure that everybody is on as even a playing field as possible. And we're really focused on these transitional periods and making sure that horses are participating in the process and getting that kind of springboard into the next phase of their career. And we're not as focused on, you know, there's other great organizations that are running thoroughbred horse shows for horses that have been off the track for a long time. But for us, we're always going to be focused on that kind of facilitating that transitional period.
All right. And so what kind of disciplines then are, I guess there's what, 10 disciplines that are that you,
yes,
that the horses compete in, is that correct?
Yep, 10 different disciplines or horse sports, if you will. I'm going to name 9 and then I'm going to forget the 10th one. So I apologize in advance. It's just how it goes. So we have eventing dressage, hunters, jumpers, field hunters, polo, working ranch, competitive trail, freestyle, which is a kind of catch-all, and then I always get to 9. But I mean, that kind of gives you the kind of scope, sure, of things. Is barrel racing is the last one.
Okay.
So really very diverse. There's something for everybody, and if it's not in one of the 9, you can go do whatever you want in freestyle, basically.
Gotcha.
And freestyle is kind of where we see a lot of kind of trick training and liberty work and stuff like that that falls out of the scope of some of the more traditional disciplines. So we are running a 10 discipline horse show in 2 days. And the way that the format has been is that the top 5 horses at the completion of each discipline in preliminary competition move on to a championship. And then there has been an overall winner from amongst the top 5. So it moves forward in kind of like a dog show fashion. Like you've got best of breed and then you have best of winners and then an overall like progression.
So there's an overall best in show.
Exactly.
Best, yeah, of the, gotcha, makeover.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know it's completely off topic, but I love that movie, Best in Show.
It's a hysterical movie. I have so dogs and I live in the dog show like world a little bit as well. So it's very familiar to me.
So in addition to the makeover, let's talk a little bit about the what else the Retired Racehorse Project is doing. So, you know, you're putting on this event and you know, with the guidelines to get these horses primarily straight off the track and you know, obviously, but what else does the Retired Racehorse Project do in addition to running that event?
Yeah. We break our mission and our work down into kind of like three core tenets. We go with education, service, and inspiration. And everything that we do kind of funnels through those kind of like lenses, if you will. So on our website, we have a free classified listing service that's exclusive to thoroughbreds for at any point in their post-race careers, whether they're recently retired and eligible for the makeover, or have had a show life or a recreational riding life. We've offered that for a really long time. We previously published a quarterly publication called Off Track Thoroughbred Magazine, and we've since gone digital. So the entire archive, which is kind of 10 years of content, basically, lives on our website as well. And we continue to produce original content for it monthly. And that's always available 100% for free. There's no paywalls or anything like that. We go to other events still. We don't do as much of the expo circuit like we used to in the beginning, but we still go to like the Kentucky 3-Day, for example. We go every year and produce demos there. This past year, we did a retraining symposium specifically for broodmares. Again, just trying to kind of support that particular population that has a kind of unique set of needs and educate people and kind of demystify the broodmare a little bit. Everything is really just focused on making sure that the breed is promoted, that the people that are involved with the horses have the resources that they need, whether that's racing connections that need to understand, like, you know, what are my options? How can I kind of approach this retirement transition phase? Or if it's people that are like curious about thoroughbreds that have thought maybe that they weren't going to be the right fit for them as a rider, and making sure that people, you know, are inspired and want to give the horses a chance. We really kind of fit in this unique spot where there's, you know, when you talk about aftercare, I think most people, their mind goes to places like Mid-Atlantic Horse Rescue, New Vocations, some of the very like well-established, well-known nonprofit aftercare accredited facilities, but there's so much of aftercare that is happening above and beyond that type of facility. People that are, you know, directly transitioning horses on behalf of racing connections, people that are, you know, just private individuals that get a horse directly off the track with no intermediary. And we're in there really just trying to make sure that somebody is creating demand for the horses so that that whole aftercare ecosystem can really thrive and has really good outlets for any kind of horse, no matter what their need is. So we're kind of in that niche trying to kind of support the bigger picture.
So I'm on the website now, and just, you know, the thing that caught my eye real quick was the horse listings.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're providing opportunity, I guess, for, are these horses all being offered by, you know, individuals that are then, you know, making them available to people that might want to get them into the makeover, or are these being offered by other, you know, aftercare groups? How is this horse listing work? Because I know we've got several partners that have, you know, asked us about how they go about getting, you know, potentially getting a retired horse, and I was unaware that you guys were doing this on your webpage. So this,
yeah,
is pretty cool.
It's so the answer to your question is all of the above. Okay. We have some organizations that do cross list with us, aftercare organizations. I mentioned Mid-Atlantic Horse Rescue that is a big user of our listing service. So they will be posting horses that some are eligible, some are not, to compete in the makeover. We've got a filter on there. So if you're specifically looking for a horse that's makeover eligible, you can filter down and look at that. We have horses that have completed the makeover. We offer a marketplace as a part of the makeover. So horses that have finished the process that are going to be for sale or adoption at the end, we'll facilitate all of that. We're not party to the transaction or anything, but we help put together listings, do the promotion, educate people on how to make a good ad for a thoroughbred. And yeah, there's a whole range of horses that are in there. Some are for adoption, some are for sale, some are for lease. So it's an incredible resource, both for people that are outside of the racing industry and people that are within the racing industry. And there's actually a feature that I would be remiss not to promote. We have what's called a scholarship listing.
I was about to ask about that. I was watching the sticker.
That was next on the list.
We were looking at the stickers and we were like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, so the way that that works is that if you have a horse that you would love to see go to the Thoroughbred Makeover, you can pre-fund some of the horse's makeover expenses as when you create the listing for that horse on our website. So that will pay the horse's fees like into escrow with us. And so when a horse is purchased through our listing service that has that scholarship listing and is ultimately registered for the makeover, we can apply that credit to the horse's makeover fees. So it's a really good way to kind of incentivize, and you know, if you have a horse that's ready to retire and you want to stay connected and you want to see that horse go through the makeover, that's a really good thing that you can take advantage of. And we're really big on trying to make sure and really bridge the gap between the racing connections and the sport horse world. And so we're really trying to do a lot to kind of help with making sure that people keep in touch, that they understand how to keep track of their horses post racing. And so this is just kind of another little thing that we can do to help facilitate that. But we do a lot of outreach with our entry list as well. We do a mailing to all the breeders. We do backside entry list, like paper entry list distribution and that sort of thing as well. Just trying to, you know, we have a pretty decent little population of horses that are retiring each year. And so we're really just trying to make people aware of where they're going and what they're doing once they retire.
So just from my own knowledge, some I see are for adoption, others are for sale. Mm-hmm. What is the ultimate difference there? Other than I see that the adoption prices are much lower than the for sale prices, it looks like.
That's a really great question. So, and that's some of what's a little bit tricky sometimes about working in the aftercare space is that we have kind of baked in this charitable status with the aftercare process. And that's not necessarily wrong, but what that does is kind of, it can kind of depress the value of the horses a little bit because if a horse is up for adoption, that's most likely an indicator that that horse is at a nonprofit facility because the reason why we get that tax advantage of, is because we're not selling a product that is competitive with the open market. Same thing for, you know, if you go to an ASPCA or something like that, you're paying a nominal adoption fee versus what you would pay to get a purebred dog from a reputable breeder. So it's a little bit similar. So they're charging a nominal adoption fee versus what the horse potentially would be worth if they were for sale in the market with a for-profit trainer, for example. Gotcha. So that's why you see a big spread. And that it's just tricky. It's not to say that going through a nonprofit facility is bad in any way. I mean, those organizations are tremendously valuable and important and have a very vital part of the overall ecosystem. And then there's a lot of horses that are going through this kind of transitional phase in their life without going through a nonprofit facility as well. And you'll see that those horses typically, you know, they could be at the very similar stage in their life and they'll be going for much higher rates. And that's something that the RRP is working to drive and improve.
All right. So you mentioned the scholarship program and you're paying for entry fees, you know, the base of the person putting the horse up for adoption or for sale would be paying for the, or part of the entry fees. What does it cost for a trainer to enter a horse into the makeover?
So we break our fees down into kind of two portions because the program goes all year long. So what they're paying for, this is makeover application season right now where like people are applying, most of them right now. So the trainers pay a $200 application fee to go through that application process. So that's like per person. And then per horse, there's a $150 registration fee. So most people, most entries, one person, one horse at this time of the year is $350 at the front end. And then When we get to August, when we're getting much closer to the actual event itself, is when we're paying the live event based fees. So that's going to be like your entry fees per division, your stabling for the week, that sort of thing. So you're going to be spending, we made some changes and stuff with our entry fees for the show end of things, so I'm a little bit rusty.
That's okay.
But you know, you're going to be spending about $200 on stabling for the week, and you're going to pay about, I think it's about $150 for your first discipline, $100 for your second discipline. So you're going to spend another couple $100 on the other end of things, depending on what things you opt into for the horse as well. So all in, it's what you're going to pay to RRP for your experience is probably about in the $700 to $800 for the year, okay. The front end and the show fees itself. And then we know that the actual cost of acquiring and caring for the horse for 10 months is a whole different ball of wax.
Are the fees generated from the applications and the entry fees and all that, is that enough to cover the makeover event? Or, obviously there, on the webpage, you've got a volunteer button, you've got a donate button. So, how much of your organization or how much of the organization and the event dependent on donations and things of that nature versus, is the event getting near the point where it's fairly self-sufficient, or is there still a need of donations for the makeover event itself?
So the entry fees do not completely cover the cost of the event specifically. Okay. And once you add in kind of staff time on top of hard costs, the makeover is probably about a $700,000 venture. When you add in the portion of salary time that goes into supporting all the activities that around it, marketing, admin, all that sort of thing, that's truly year round. So the entry fees in terms of our overall operating budget are only covering about somewhere between a quarter and a third of an operating budget that's, well over, we're at about $1.3, $1.4 million a year. So the entry fees are covering a portion of that. And then as a nonprofit, we're raising all the rest of it through a number of different avenues. We do have corporate sponsorships. We do have private donations. We're eligible for some grants. TCA has been a long-term supporter of ours. But we also are not eligible for kind of what you would consider traditional aftercare funding. We are outside of the scope of TAA's funding model. So if you go and, put a horse through a sale and you pay your little percentage fee, RRP doesn't get any of that because we're not in that kind of funding pipeline. So we're still having to go and raise that money through other sources. Grants, donations, sponsorships, we sell logo wear, we do silent auctions, the kind of whole array of nonprofit activities to kind of collectively raise everything that we need to operate from year to year.
I need a retired racehorse puffer jacket. That's what I need. The retired racehorse project, nice puffer jacket, stick a little...
We got you covered.
Stick a little Pocket Aces Racing logo on the bottom.
Yep.
We've had a...
Order it up.
Yep.
Send me the bill.
Yeah. We kind of somewhat accidentally have that our logo that has the little horse head with the crown has somewhat inadvertently become a little bit of a mark for the breed. So we have to kind of police a little bit. It's very popular, and sometimes people think that it's just a standard breed marking that's just kind of part of public domain. We're like, no, that's actually our logo. But it's just become very... it's just kind of ubiquitous, and it helps us too. It's, people want to wear that mark on their clothing and support the organization, and it kind of helps with our marketing too. So it gives us a little bit of a 2-for-1 in that sense.
Yeah. Well, seriously, Patty, find out what you want on there and
yes!
Let me know. So you're looking ahead to October, the Kentucky Horse Park, and for any of our listeners that have never made it out to the Kentucky Horse Park, whether you go out for the makeover or just go out on your own.
Where have y'all been?
You got to get out there. It's a beautiful place. I will say that the ingress and egress for a large event is a little frustrating.
Yeah.
But otherwise, get out there, go check it out. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. And so thinking about what, you know, the goals for 2025. We're 9 months out. Amazing as that is, to October 2025. What are your goals in terms of the number of competitors you hope to see this year? What are you thinking? What are you hoping to see? That might be in terms of growth, or it might be something different that you're doing for this year, or that you've done in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think last fall we announced a couple of tweaks to our format going into this kind of 10-year anniversary for the event. And what we've done is we've actually done away with the overall like best of breed or best in show. So there's not going to be an overall champion. But what that enabled us to do is to take the prize money, the $10,000 of prize money that was paid to that winner. And we've redistributed it down to the disciplines. And so we're paying prize money a little bit deeper, and we are opening up the path to the championship to twice as many horses. So if you're in the top 10 now, you're going to your discipline championship. So we're still having a championship with the kind of like top of every discipline. We're just not ending up with that overall like overarching winner. So, you know, we really want to open things up and give people a chance to kind of make a little bit of a check and recoup some of their costs, and you know, kind of have the goal and the aspirations of making it into the top of their discipline. So that's going to be a little bit different for us. We'll kind of have to make some changes operationally and logistically, kind of about what facilities and stuff we're using in the horse park. So that'll be a new challenge for us. But I think overall, it's really going to improve the competitor experience. It's really going to improve the spectator experience. As you mentioned, getting in and out of the horse park is it can be really confusing. I think it wasn't until my second year of going to the horse park that I could walk out of a building and know what direction I needed to go.
Right.
There's just something disorienting about it. And there's a lot of people that have never been past like the museums or the offices that are at the horse park that don't know that there's like a whole horse show facility on the back half of the property. So it is overwhelming. But what this will do for us, we'll kind of make a couple of changes in our primary venues and where our kind of activity hubs are located. So I think it'll really make it more accessible and kind of consolidate things and make it easier for spectators to come in and see a little bit more. You know, for us in October, Keeneland's running.
Yep.
So you've always got a little bit of a competition in terms of like convincing people, like, you know, you can come out for an hour or two before you go to the races in the afternoon and like come out and see what these horses are doing. And so we're just kind of looking for every opportunity to make it easy for people to come and do that. So I'm excited to see how that goes overall for the organization and the kind of like bigger scheme of things. I think there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to promote the standing of the thoroughbred sport horse. And a lot of that goes hand in hand with traceability. We need to know more about what horses are doing in their post-racing lives so that we can really quantify and contextualize like exactly what the breed's contributions are to sport and to sport breeding, so that we can kind of keep advancing the standing of the breed overall. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there. And I'd like to do some more in terms of putting more incentives in the hands of the people that are doing the work that are outside of the traditional models. So, you know, creating more opportunity to offer more scholarships for makeover trainers. And, you know, we're aiming to increase our prize money as well. And just really trying to get to a point where we're rewarding people in a tangible way for the effort that they're putting in on behalf of the horses, and just kind of trying to keep building on that momentum. So we've got some big stuff to bite off and keep us busy for the near future.
So I want to encourage everybody that's listening, our, our partners that are listening, just our regular, you know, non-partners that are listening, take some time today. Please go to the website, the Retired Racehorse Project website. It's therrp.org. Really simple. Go there, learn a little bit about what they're doing. You can, if you have an interest in volunteering for any of their events, but I assume especially the makeover is where they need some help. You know, look at those opportunities, look at their donation opportunities that are available. I will tell you that we will be looking at some sponsorship opportunities for Pocket Aces Racing.
Yep.
And discussing some other things that I just have had some thoughts as we've sat here, as we've been discussing. You know, we always have we have two open houses, one in the spring and one in the fall. And just as I'm sitting here thinking, I thought, well, maybe there's some way we could incorporate the makeover event during our fall open house.
That'd be a lot
year.
Of fun.
Not yep. sure how yet. Not sure how we work that out, but I want us to work on that, Patty. So,
all right.
And then Kirsten will probably, is Kirsten or Kirsten? I want to make sure I'm getting it right.
Kirsten.
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 So,
Kirsten,
sorry.
So, no problem.
So, as we get a little further along, I'll be reaching out to you so we can talk about how Pocket Aces Racing can be a little more involved in what you guys are doing, because we've had several of our horses that have competed in the makeover yep. over the years,
yep.
and would love to see our horses continue to get that opportunity. We've got one that we were selling here at the digital sale as a broodmare prospect. If something happens and she doesn't happen to get sold, I'd love to see if we can figure out a way to get her adopted by somebody and maybe potentially compete in an upcoming event. So I've been
brainstorming. You've not been idle.
As you've been talking, I've been sitting here, just my mind's running. So
that's that inspiration piece, man. I'm glad to hear it's working.
So, you know, normally we kind of close out these conversations with a little discussion about, you know, you've mentioned, you know, you were a racing fan, not a super big handicapper, but you know, you follow along casually, at least with thoroughbred racing. So, do you have a you know, other than that $5 bet on the horse with the female jockey? Do you have a favorite memory of, you know, racing related memory that you can share with us?
I think, like, in recent years, and like any true feminist, I really enjoyed the Travers this year. Really loved watching Torpedo Anna, and
yes.
I really, like, who can forget Arcangelo winning the Belmont for Jenna? I think
yeah.
that was just, like, such a great moment.
That reaction video of her is, like, one of my favorites.
like, if you need to get hyped for something, just,
right?
like, pull that up on YouTube.
And the one question that, and you may have touched on some of this already with some of the hopes that you have for the Retired Racehorse Project, the makeover, but you're queen for a day in North American racing. You're calling all the shots. What's something that you might implement or change that you might make or something that you might tweak as a little improvement to just... help the industry, because, you know, Lord knows thoroughbred racing industry gets in its way more than maybe any other industry that I can think of. What's something that you might tweak or change to help us take that next step forward and improve the sport that we all love?
I think that, and we're already, I'll preface this by saying I think we're already making a lot of progress here. I'd really just love to see a mentality shift. I think sometimes we get a little bit of, like, everything for the thoroughbred is very racing oriented. Like, even the jockey club is, you know, specific mandate of improving the breed for the purposes of racing. And I want to get to a point where the breed is the breed, no matter what it is that they're doing. And so I want to see where we have a breed registry that is taking into account the contributions beyond racing. And I really want to get to a point where we kind of rid ourselves a little bit of this, like, okay, they're going to race and then we'll figure out whatever else it is after that, like, if this doesn't pan out. I think that we can be looking at the thoroughbred and our plans for their lives in a much more kind of like holistic, like continuum sort of way. And I think that, and this is one space where I think we've made tremendous improvement, is that like we just need to be looking at aftercare as it's a cost of doing business. Like it's just built in with every other consideration that you're making in terms of, you know, planning a breeding to entering races and all of that sort of thing. Like that's just kind of part of the process rather than, you know, just something that you kind of blindly check off the box and go on your way. And I really do think that we've seen a lot of improvement there. But aftercare is every bit as expensive as owning racehorses. And we still need a lot of support in this space. So I am hopeful that we can continue to kind of move the needle on that.
Could not agree more. Well, Kirsten, again, thank you so very much for joining us today and sharing with us about the Retired Racehorse Project and the Thoroughbred Makeover. And I hope that everybody out there listening can find a little bit of time in their day or in the next couple days to hop over to the site. Again, that's therrp.org. Take a look at what they're doing and help if you are able. I know not everyone can, but if you have the means, I certainly encourage it, because they're doing great work. And as you heard, it costs a lot of money for this organization to keep doing what it's doing, and it's what they're doing is much needed and much appreciated. So if you're able, would love for you to see how you can help. So Kirsten, again, thank you so much. And Patty, if you'd like to wind us down.
Absolutely. Thank you everybody for tuning in this week. We greatly appreciate everybody's support. We love that you guys are listening and you come back every I want to say every week, because that's the response from last year, but every other week now. I keep forgetting. Make sure that you're subscribed to our channels. You can find the podcast. It's on Castos. We also post those links pretty frequently on our Facebook. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and on Threads. It's all under Pocket Aces Racing. Make sure also that you do roll on over, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and hit the bell notification. I know, Jared, we've got our own little aftercare update video that's going to go live for some of our horses pretty soon. Kind of like a little check-in on some of our folks. So definitely go over there, you guys. You don't want to miss that one. We have some pretty cool updates, I think. But other than that, as I tell everybody every Wednesday, have a happy Wednesday, have a good Wednesday, make good choices, and the podcast is out.